worsening COVID numbers in Indiana, the vice presidential debate, plus COVID relief potentially off the table, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 9th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box said Indiana's latest COVID numbers are concerning, while the governor's ongoing position is that it's the responsibility of all Hoosiers to help mitigate the virus's spread. Indiana's rate of positive cases versus people tested has increased significantly in the last couple of weeks. Hospitalizations for COVID are at their highest level in 4 months. But Box says much of the state is still in a low-risk position, and so she says the state is focused on talking with local governments and health departments where the spread of the virus is getting worse.
To work individually with those particular counties or districts to make sure that we address with them those options available to them.
Governor Eric Holcomb didn't take questions from the press during Wednesday's COVID-19 update like he has for the last 7 months. But earlier in the day, at an unrelated event, Holcomb said the state is in a much different place than at the start of the pandemic, and he emphasized the need for people to be responsible.
It's not just the government or an individual business. That means every 6.7 million Hoosiers that are all part of this and contribute to positivity rates, et cetera.
Meanwhile, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Dr. Woody Myers says it's imperative for Indiana to reverse course on its COVID-19 restrictions. He argues the state still has time to avoid an apocalyptic spread of the virus that some are predicting for the fall. Myers says he would impose a mask-wearing mandate that includes enforcement and reimpose COVID-19 restrictions like capacity and gathering limits across the state, with those restrictions stricter in some areas than others. Is now the right time for Governor Holcomb to stop taking questions during weekly COVID briefings? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, the latest numbers that we got today have a new record for newly reported COVID cases, which is 22% higher than the previous record for newly reported cases, which came a week ago. How concerned are you?
Oh, I'm very concerned because this is months in advance of when the medical professionals thought the crisis would hit. And we're already there. So it's time for Eric Holcomb to put on his big boy pants, admit that he was wrong to peel back all the restrictions and put a statewide mask mandate in place with enforcement, just as Dr. Myers has suggested. He's absolutely right. Pushing it down on the responsibility of everybody when they're giving off bad signals. I mean, tell everybody to be responsible. At the same time, you say you can congregate in large numbers and you can go indoors and all the rest of that, and you don't have to have a statewide mask. Having it locally makes no sense because people don't stay in the same county or the same city. They work one place, they drive another place, they live another place. So it needs to be statewide and it needs to be done now. He said he would do it when the numbers trended in the wrong direction. And he doesn't want to admit that he doesn't want to do it now because he's afraid of offending Donald Trump and Mike Pence and the right wing of his party. So he's not doing what he ought to do as governor of Indiana.
Is it time for Indiana to reimpose COVID restrictions?
It might be. I think the governor has been very open about this from the beginning, that he's going to react based on medical data. And they're reviewing that. Dr. Box obviously said it was concerning that numbers were moving that direction. So we'll see what continues to move forward. But Dr. Myers' response, I think, is what fuels frustration, I think, among Hoosiers and Americans. I said months ago that the biggest problem that we're going to have on putting restrictions in place and relying on people to use personal responsibility to keep themselves and other people safe is that the vast majority of people are not going to be affected by this medically. They're going to be affected by it economically or just as how they're living their daily lives if these restrictions come back into place. So when Dr. Myers says something like, it's going to be apocalyptic if we don't go back to stage one and shut the whole world down again, that is not going to happen. It didn't happen in March.
It didn't happen in April. I want to say, he didn't say stage one. He thinks stage three or four.
Okay, fine. Right. But having a gubernatorial candidate set the expectation that if we stay here, there's going to be an apocalypse. That's never going to happen. Just fuels the frustration that people already have about the expectations of this killing tens of millions of people globally and millions of Americans. It hasn't happened. Is it dangerous? Yes. Should we take precautions? Of course. But set this expectation that the world is going to melt down. It isn't going to happen, and it hurts your ability as the government to enforce the requirements that are in place.
I want to ask.
The worst state, the worst country in the world in terms of deaths per capita. We're 4% of the population and 20% of the deaths.
Because this isn't China, and you can't throw people in prison for not
shutting
their business
down. It's not Italy
either.
It's not France or Spain or any other place.
I remember Italy having a great story on this. Mm.
John, I want to ask about the governor. So I think when we went to stage five, we all expected that the governor would stop doing the weekly press conferences, and that's what happened. But this, for two things, prompt me to talk about this. One, the numbers are going in the wrong direction. But two, on Wednesday, we had a press conference like we have a little earlier with Dr. Box and Dr. Weaver, the chief medical officer at the health department. And then at the regularly scheduled press conference time that we've been doing with Holcomb, Governor Holcomb and Dr. Box were on Facebook Live in the briefing room talking about these numbers but not taking any questions. So he was there at the same time, same place, only not taking any questions. How bad does that look?
That's a bad look. I think we've seen how bad it looks when the White House isn't providing accurate information or, in the case of the president's health, any information that's useful. And I think it's equally bad for the governor, not on the same scale, certainly. I don't think he's misled anybody intentionally. But silence is a problem as well when you have a pandemic and when individuals are hungry for valid, vetted information. And I think if you're going to go out there and provide these numbers, you need to be willing to answer questions and put them in context. I think he probably will do that. He's left himself a lot of wiggle room, as Mike suggested. He never declared victory. There were no banner, no balloon drops. He didn't say, COVID, you've been defeated. He always said, we're going to play this by the numbers. So he did leave himself some wiggle room, and I think in all likelihood we will see stepped up measures here, as we've seen in, only two states in the country are going the right direction in terms of the trend. Europe is having another wave. We look at history, which I often say is our best guide. We look at the Spanish flu, so-called Spanish flu of 1918. It came in waves. Everybody says it was of 1918, but if you look at the history, it was also the Spanish flu of 1919 and even the Spanish flu of 1920, because people sort of declared victory prematurely, and it came back. So I think we can take that history as a guide here.
Nikki, another reason why, would we be talking about this if, I think there was a lot of confusion, not just from, there was confusion among reporters, which is never good because we should be the ones who understand how some of this is working. But I think there was, I heard from a lot of regular people who were like, where, and not even people who are opposed to Governor Holcomb, but just wondering, wait, why?
Oh, yeah, I got a ton of texts and direct messages from people saying, hey, what's going on? Am I missing the governor? What's going on? And I think when you change something, look, I'm not saying they can't make, a decision to move in a different direction. That's fine. But I think explaining it clearly and also saying why. Why suddenly, after 6 months of this, when our numbers are going up, is the governor not available? Like, it was never explained, especially when he's in the building, in the room, still doing a live,
briefing
video
of some sort,
but yet we can't ask him questions.
All right. Well, Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris met this week for the campaign cycle's only vice presidential debate, a debate that quite honestly could not have looked more different from its presidential counterpart the week before. Pence and Harris had a cogent, coherent debate, a departure from the first presidential debate. Seated and separated by plexiglass due to COVID concerns, the two candidates focused on the actual issues in the race, highlighting the differences between the two tickets. That included positions on health care, the environment, and the response to the pandemic.
And we began, really, before the month of February was out, to develop a vaccine and to develop medicines and therapeutics that have been saving lives all along the way. And under President Trump's leadership, Operation Warp Speed, we believe we'll have literally tens of millions of doses of a vaccine before the end of this year.
Whatever the vice president is claiming the administration has done, clearly it hasn't worked. When you're looking at over 210,000 dead bodies in our country, American lives that have been lost, families that are grieving that loss.
Both candidates, however, regularly failed to answer the questions actually asked by the moderator, Susan Page of USA Today. Mike O'Brien, there was perhaps more focus on this debate than in years past because of the presidential debate the week prior, and so questions about how both of these candidates would help or hurt their counterparts. So did this change, though, the dynamics of the race at all?
I mean, it looked presidential. It didn't look like the last one, which was kind of a chaotic mess between both of them. I thought Vice President Pence did a great job. I thought he was very clear and spoke to the administration director on some things that people haven't heard about through all the rest of this noise. We always ask whether it moves the needle here or there. I don't think it does specifically, but it certainly gives impressions of what these teams are going to look like. So you got a taste of. I mean, we know that the dynamics between President Trump and Vice President Pence as a pair. But now you get a taste of what Kamala Harris, vice presidency, might look like. The other question that they both dodged very effectively, which I think is a relevant one, particularly for Biden, if he's going to look at two terms in this, is you've got a 77-year-old with an potential eight years ahead of him as president. So, and Donald Trump at 74, or be 74 or 75 next summer. So it becomes pretty relevant when you have presidential candidates and presidents in their mid to late 70s.
Yeah.
Who these people are backing them up.
Of the many questions that were not answered by the candidates, the one that I think frustrated me personally most was the question about, have you had that conversation about presidential succession or things like that? And to your point, neither one of them answered it, when I think it's really relevant. A lot of polls suggested that President Trump did not help himself in last week's debate. Do you think Mike Pence's performance helped that rebound?
I think Mike Pence showed a demeanor, certainly, that was radically different than Donald Trump's. So to that extent, yes, it helped him. I don't think he answered a couple of crucial questions, like if they pack the court the way they're trying to do, and it's never been done in the history of this country before, to try to put somebody on in a lifetime appointment with his numbers in the tank and within a month of the election. He didn't answer the question of what Indiana would be like when that court with the radical right people that they've appointed becomes law. Because what it means is all abortions, no matter why, in Indiana would be outlawed. And it also means that coverage for pre-existing condition and lifetime caps would go. Because one of the first decisions that Supreme Court's going to make in November is on the Affordable Care Act that 20 million people rely on in this pandemic. He didn't want to answer those questions because he didn't want to admit that after 4 years of repeal and replace, they haven't replaced. They haven't come up with an idea for health care that would make any sense for millions of people. So they're going to take away the health care and they're going to take away any choice. At the same time, I find it ironic that the pro-birth party of Donald Trump and Mike Pence are willing to use stem cells from aborted fetuses to come up with treatments for Donald Trump when they wanted to deny any stem cell research being done for the rest of us. It is the height of hypocrisy.
Both of the candidates kind of talked over the moderator at times. The moderator trying to hold them to the time limits, they just kind of blew past that. But Kamala Harris did 13 times. Mike Pence did it 45. And in fact, one of the notable moments, if you will, multiple moments, was Kamala Harris telling Mike Pence, I'm speaking, Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking. How do you think that played from Mike Pence particularly?
I mean, he's very polite when he talks over you, so it still sort of isn't as off-putting as it might be elsewhere. I do wish that Susan Page had, if I counted the number of times she said, thank you, Mr. Vice President, at some point, she needed to say something else, you've gone over your time, I'm going to have to cut you off. Or when they're not answering the question, I wish she would have said something like, look, we're not moving on to another topic until you guys answer this question. But she was just stuck on this script she had and how many segments they needed, and she just wanted to stick with it.
I liked Susan Page's questions a lot better than I liked Chris Wallace's from the presidential debate, but I thought Wallace did a better job of trying to get both candidates to actually answer the questions that he asked. Is it good or bad for both of those candidates and any impact that it might have on the race that maybe the most talked about thing that came out of it was a fly that landed on Mike Pence's head for about a couple minutes?
It is amazing how much attention the fly got. Probably
I
had
it was a Russian drone.
Had it? Well, who knows? They didn't dissect it. The batteries are technology is pretty small these days. I don't know what that says about it. I mean, maybe people need some comedic relief. This has been such a highly charged atmosphere. I mean, everybody's puckered. I think that the fly might have given us a sense of sort of, okay, let's take a breath and chuckle a bit at this. You know, it was in terms of the politeness. There's so many ways to analyze debates. You can say, you know, like, was if you're a male candidate and the questioner is female, is the willingness to ignore time limits and her suggestion that you've overstayed your welcome, you know, so to speak, by ignoring that, are you somehow? Is that different because it's a female versus a male? I'm a guy. It's hard for me to interpret that myself. But yeah, a lot of experts.
It also depends on who's judging them, too.
Of course. Right. But a lot of people said that was problematic. The notion, mansplaining, which I guess was not in my lexicon before. But I'm usually way behind on words. But
we can't tell it all, Jim.
Yeah, not at all.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Eismiller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the vice presidential debate have any impact on the race? A yes or B no. Last week we asked you about the impact of the first presidential debate, and 57% of you say the first presidential debate helped Joe Biden. Just 9% said it helped Donald Trump, and about a third of you said it really won't have an impact in the end. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, a small business advocacy group says Indiana entrepreneurs are frustrated by President Trump's announcement from earlier this week that he would wait until after the election to pass another federal stimulus package around COVID-19. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports the delay puts small businesses further on the edge if no relief comes anytime soon.
The proposed stimulus package included financial aid to small businesses and those unemployed due to the pandemic. A survey conducted by the National Federation of Independent Business forecasts that 1 in 5 Hoosier small businesses will close over the next 6 months if economic conditions do not improve. Indiana State Director Barbara Quant says it's disappointing when both parties have pointed to the importance of helping small businesses.
As these months drag on and small business owners are doing what they can, it is frustrating to see that while there's agreement on small business, we can't get a package that helps them going through Congress.
Quant says she hopes everyone will come back to the table soon to work out an agreement on the additional relief before more small businesses have to close.
Now, after the president tweeted about cutting off negotiations early in the week, he later tweeted that he wanted Congress to pass relief funding for airlines, small businesses, and individuals. He has since tweeted that he wants a major relief package. Then he tweeted that he wants more than either Democrats or Republicans in Congress are willing to give. And then I think he also tweeted that progress is being made. So,
this is why you don't live tweet the congressional negotiations.
Yeah, exactly. And that's also as of the taping of this show, so be prepared for all of that to be outdated by the time you see or hear this.
Generally.
Exactly. John Schwanes, with all of the focus now on Donald Trump's position, how much is that putting him at risk in the election?
First of all, I just want the control room to know I'm taping two responses to this, so maybe three. But the first one is this. This makes no sense politically for the president. Not only because of the timing of the election and how much uncertainty there is surrounding his condition, but his own appointee to the chairmanship of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, that very morning, I mean, what, 4 hours before his famous, now infamous tweet that he's ceasing negotiations, had said, we have to have this. And any number of respected economists said, we have to have this. And for him, then, even if you want to, you know, slow it down for whatever reason, to go out and tweet and basically then say, hey, any blame, you know, put the billboard up, the blame goes here.
Right.
And if there's any confusion, the blame goes here.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask about. Donald Trump is far from the only person at this negotiating table. You have Nancy Pelosi, who is, you know, not exactly popular in a lot of places in this country, including Indiana. You have the Senate Republicans, Mitch McConnell, who is not exactly popular in a lot of places in this country. And yet it seems like no matter what happens now between today and November 3rd, you can blame President Trump one way or the other, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, of any possible way it was helpful. I guess in some way the initial tweet put everyone's focus back on the negotiations again. So maybe it kickstarted them in a way, but I don't really know. So
I don't really know should be like the motto of 2020.
That's a very generous interpretation.
I want to ask this as it relates to the Supreme Court nomination, because Mitch McConnell at an event in Kentucky this morning was reported as saying that he thinks it's unlikely that a relief package could get through Congress in 3 weeks before the election.
Yeah.
but they can do the Supreme Court justice.
Yeah. Is that going to be a problem for Republicans?
Oh, it certainly is, because you've got people that are hurting. I mean, they're talking about 1 in 5 small businesses in Indiana going under. And they can't pass a relief package, but they can pack the court, which is what they're trying to do, so they can repeal the Affordable Care Act and take away a right to choice for women. That's what they're trying to do. And he doesn't care about anything but that. And I think that's a tremendous liability, because no matter how you feel about abortion, there are a lot of people who think that a woman, if a woman's life is in danger, if she's a victim of rape, there are certain circumstances that people say, I don't like it, but I understand. And here they are, they want to take that away, they want to take away the insurance coverage, pre-existing condition coverage. It's a big problem.
Well, there are a lot of voters, predominantly Republican voters, who want to see Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. Do they want to see that at the expense of another COVID relief package in the next month?
It doesn't have to be that way.
But isn't that the option that Republicans have set up for themselves?
Right. I know that's what they're saying, but it doesn't have to be like that. I mean, I think McConnell is reflecting what we heard. You know, we heard Mike Braun say, look, I think there are legitimate concerns over what are we doing. We're spending trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. We haven't really accounted for what we spent to know what it did. And you got guys like Mike Braun who are saying, I'm not for more money. So I think McConnell is reflecting what the understanding he has of his caucus that they don't want to do this. The ball's moving on this.
This literally might be outdated by the time you hear or see it, Governor. Which is great to say about my television program that I'm hosting.
Can I take
Governor,
my next segment now?
Yeah,
my
exactly.
Next answer now.
Governor Holcomb is looking to future economic opportunities as a partial solution to businesses closing around the state during the pandemic. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports a conference this week in Indianapolis highlighted companies around the world looking to make future investments.
Hundreds of people are attending a virtual conference hosted by the U.S. Department of Commerce focused on continuing to bring together advanced manufacturing and technology companies around the world. Governor Holcomb says while it's concerning that some businesses around the state have and will close due to the pandemic, this conference gives a potential path forward for the state.
There's 500 businesses that are tuned into this one conference, right? And so what we have to make sure that we're doing is we create an environment that is very attractive for the next investment.
Indiana has the highest concentration of manufacturing jobs as a state in the country.
Nikki Kelly, there's always so much of a focus on attracting businesses to Indiana. And obviously, there should be a focus on attracting businesses to Indiana. But I'm hearing more and more from businesses who are already here saying, well, what about us? We are shutting down now. Is that becoming a problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different world. I mean,
right.
Normally when the IEDC is working and they're trying to attract new businesses, you're not in the middle of a pandemic with a bunch of businesses shutting down. So that focus is obviously getting criticized. I do want to point out that the governor did expand some eligibility to a state business program for small businesses where they can get up to $10,000. So they had only spent like $1 million of the $30 million they set aside. They realized they had kind of made that too tight. So there is some relief for businesses in Indiana, and hopefully they'll at least go for that.
Governor Holcomb can't stop trying to get businesses to come here, but is the spotlight a little too much on that as opposed to the homegrown businesses?
Always has been. That's the sex appeal in the headlines. You don't necessarily get as much credit or much pop for shoring up a business, certainly if all you're doing is keeping it from shrinking or closing, as you would be from bringing in jobs. So, I mean, it's sort of the truism in business generally. When you're trying, you know, any business that's looking for new business and to grow its market share, you know, the old joke is you treat the prospects, you know, one way. They're the ones getting wined and dined. And then once you sign on and you're a client, okay, well, the dinners probably aren't as frequent and the cocktails may not flow as readily.
Are businesses right to be concerned that the spotlight's in the wrong place right now?
I think you have to do it all. You've got to make sure that you're shoring up who's here. Maybe federal stimulus comes down. You're able to put more money into the system and help those small businesses. Mitch Daniels always said job creation is like trying to keep a bathtub full of water when the stopper's pulled, because you're constantly losing jobs on the bottom end and you're trying to keep it full and attract on the top end. I think they're smart. I think the city of Indianapolis is doing this, and certainly the state of Indiana is. Thinking past the pandemic, it's easy to think right now, but what are you doing to make sure that we're bringing back convention business, or we're doing the other things that are necessary?
When Governor Holcomb talks about the job commitments that the IDC has managed to secure this year in the middle of a pandemic, that's really impressive. But is there? But you just talked about you got to do it all. Is he doing enough on the other
end? He's clearly not. I mean, we're talking about one in five businesses closing because of the pandemic, and he's sitting on $1 billion in aid that he could help. 10,000 is something, but it's not enough for if you have 10 or 15 employees, that doesn't go very far. And what he needs to do is step up and help them now, because if we lose 40% of the restaurants and how many gyms and how many hair care salons and how many dog grooming places, all because he sat on a pot of money hoping he could use it to bail out the state budget when people were in need. And he's not going to be able to explain that.
Well, we are going to be keeping an eye on that money, because time is starting to run short as to when you can spend it unless they extend it, which, flip that coin. All right, well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask, please, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.